And so I love reading the suttas. And so I wanted to start with a sutta about generosity. And this is from the Hituvitaka, the group of threes. And so there's lots of suttas that are everything is groups of threes, and they're very poetic. This is a rainless cloud, number 75. This was said by the Buddha. Practitioners, these three kinds of persons are found existing in the world. What three? One who is like a rainless cloud, one who reigns locally, and one who reigns everywhere. Now, what kind of person is like a rainless cloud? Here, a certain person is not a giver to anyone. They do not give food, drink, clothing, vehicles, garlands, scents, ointments, beds, lodging, and lamps to recluses and Brahmins, to the poor, to the destitute, and the needy. This kind of person is like a rainless cloud. Now, what is the kind of person who reigns locally? Here, a certain person is a giver to some, but not a giver to others. Food, drink, clothing, vehicles, garlands, scents, ointments, beds, lodging, and lamps. They give only to some recluses and Brahmins, to some of the poor, destitute, and needy, but not to the others. This is the kind of person who reigns locally. Now, practitioners, what is the kind of person who reigns everywhere? Here, a certain person gives to all. They give food, drink, clothing, vehicles, garlands, scents, ointments, beds, lodging, and lamps to all recluses and Brahmins, to the poor, destitute, and needy. This is the kind of person who reigns everywhere. These are the three kind of persons found existing in the world. I love this sutta not only because it's about the rain, which is apropos for us today, but also because of just the list. The list is still so appropriate for us, except for the one about the lamps, you know. And then you just think about like the society that they were in, they probably just didn't have the light switch, you know, like we do here. And so a lamp would be something that really was impactful. And just this idea of who are you giving to, you know, to the monastics, the recluses, and to the Brahmins, and to the poor and the destitute and the needy. Just really thinking about just like all beings, like just offering this offering of generosity. And so I really think that this path of harmlessness that we're on, the do no harm of our precepts, really is based in this attitude of generosity, this attitude of the heart of what can we give? How do we show up in relationship for each other? And I think a lot about this because at this time there can be a lot of anxiety about the world, given the news, which we won't refer to, but you all know it's there. It's the elephant in the room right now. And there can be a lot of fear. And in that fear, there can be a lot of desire to worry about this one here, the body, heart, mind of the individual, in who the body that's breathing, the body that's thinking. And the Buddha is really teaching us in this place of generosity. Like, how can I perceive the world differently? Even in the teachings, there's the wonderful sutta where Ananda asked the Buddha, "Oh yeah, Buddha, you know, the Sangha is half of the holy life." And we all know, you know, that the Buddha says, "No, actually, the Sangha is the whole of the holy life." And so we know that this relational field is of utmost importance to our practice. And yet it is so hard to understand because for most of us, we've been taught since we were young that we are an individual, that I am this body. I am these thoughts. This is me. This is mine. This is mine too. Don't take it. You know, like, this is my water. These are my glasses. And, you know, we have, like, if I go out and get in your car, you know, there might be a problem, right? So we do have this understanding of the world. And yet, through the Buddhist teachings, how can we reduce suffering? The path to reduce suffering. So I wanted to talk about generosity through this lens of anatta, which is translated as not self. And so some people think it means no self, but it's actually the Buddha never said no self or self. And so I wanted to share this quote from Thanissaro Bhikkhu, who's down here, Metta Monastery in Southern California. And he says, in terms of the text, the perception of self is called an action of I-making and my-making. The perception of a not-self is part of the activity called not-self. And so the Buddha never elevated one perception over the other. That means the responsibility, this is Thanissaro Bhikkhu, is still on us, you and me, to discern, decide for ourselves when each one is beneficial. So sometimes I may need to come up and be an I, having worked as a public school teacher in elementary, so there's definitely a time where I was like, okay, everyone, this person, I am becoming this teacher in this moment, and we are all going to do whatever it is. So there is that I'm making, and it's different from this place of like, this is all mine. And so then there's other times where there's not self. I mean, Mary was able to put this water in this jar for me. But really, is there a possibility that I own this water? You know, it's hard to say. People do own water these days. But, you know, really, it's not something that we can think of in that way. And so there is this way of interbeing. And so most of us, we have these views. We have these views of who we are and how we orient in the world. And so this concept of the self is a core mindset that most of us operate out of. And it really creates a place where we are in constant struggle from when we're young to show up and see if we can be in a place. Is it safe enough for me to be here? Is it not safe? And we're constantly figuring that out and guarding against it. And that's very wise, because we need to attend to ourselves. And at the same time, there's a limitation there when we think of how we engage from the Buddha's teachings. Because when we have this perception of self that's very small, it's based on ignorance. And ignorance is not seeing clearly, because we are always in connection. We are always in connection. There is no solid, permanent, enduring person here or there or anywhere. And so many of us, we believe that this self is this physical form. But the physical form is made up of the elements, is made up of water. And even our thoughts, we sometimes think, oh, I must be my thoughts. But, you know, the research is that, you know, we think almost the same thoughts every day. Maybe it's up to 9%. At some point, it was 7% of our thoughts are original each day. But I think maybe 7 to 9, let's say. And so whose thoughts are they? Oftentimes, they're said that we're thinking the culture's thoughts. We're thinking our family's thoughts. We're thinking the thoughts that we were trained to think. And I find that's very interesting, because in Buddhism, we remember we watch the thoughts and we realize that we are not our thoughts. Thoughts could be useful. I had to get here from my house. I'd never gotten here before. If I had, it wasn't thinking, you know, who knows where I would have ended up. I had to use them. So we know their utility. There's a utility in these forms. There's a utility in remembering I have a body that needs to eat every day. And ultimately, it's limited. And so when we think of the self as this singular identity, then when we get to the list of all the things in the sutta, you know, we think about food. Well, here's my food. We think the, well, maybe of my family. I'll include my family. And we think about drink. Oh, here's a drink. Well, it's for me. We think about clothing. We think about vehicles, garlands, scents, ointments, beds, lodgings, and lamps. When we think about this limited idea of an individual, we think about only about accumulating those things in regards to this one here. And we really know that we are on this interconnected planet. That when I, whatever I take for this one here is inextricably bound to others on the planet. There is no separation between us. There is no independence. I am actually not, I mean, as much as I would like to think I'm an independent being, I am not an independent being. I mean, I have choices. I can make those, but I'm not a singular identity. I'm infinitely connected in so many ways to the world. So self is a construct of the mind. So this way that we think of self or not self are ways that we can see in the mind that we can help us learn to be in the world. And so many of us, we have been taught to be this individual and to be self-centered all the time. So when we go to something, we're like, what's in it for me? And in Buddhism, this aspect of generosity is this little bit like, how can I help? How can I be of service? What is the need of the community? And so it's a very different focus. And at times we need to consider ourselves as part of that community, because some of us are always giving, always giving, always giving. And then we have to pause and be like, oh, right. This one too needs to be nourished. And so self is a concept of the mind, and it's a conceptual framework of the mind. And so we can use it and utilize it, but remember that it's empty. I know, that's when you go, whoosh, you know, like, oh my goodness, it's empty. But here we are all sitting with each other. And there is this term that we use more in the Mahayana teachings than in the Theravadin teachings, but it's very useful in the sense of the relative reality and the ultimate reality. And once again, this is just a construct, but when we think of the ultimate reality, you know, it's hard for me to believe that I could even put this laptop on top of the desk, because we know that this is actually, even in science, made up of only empty space. But somehow or rather it rests right there. And so this ultimate reality where we are all interconnected and we are this quality of interbeing that Thich Nhat Hanh refers to in the teachings of the Plum Village tradition, that's the ultimate reality. And so both of them exist simultaneously. And for me, when I think about it, I use this image of like, so there's a window, and at one side I'm looking in to the relative reality. And if I just turn around and I'm looking out, and it's like, whew, there's the universe, you know, there's the ultimate reality. So it's not separate. The transcendent and the relative live here at the same time. It's just how am I going to perceive the world? And the reason why I bring this in is because it speaks to the habits of mind. What are the habits in our mind, and how do we turn towards things? And in our society, oftentimes the habit is towards the individual, towards this self-centeredness. And so we need to uproot that sense, because it's often based on the poisons of greed, the poisons of hatred, and the poisons of confusion. And so this relationality that Thich Nhat Hanh, as I mentioned, used this term interbeing. And so when we look through this land of interconnectedness, we can really begin to think about, what does the community need? You know, what can we do that is not just for myself, but for others? I wanted to share this quote from Thich Nhat Hanh, and he actually, the name of the lineage is the inside of interbeing, the order of interbeing. And so really a beautiful pointing to this interconnected nature. And he says the insight of interbeing will help remove discrimination, fear, and the dualistic way of thinking. We inter are. Even suffering and happiness inter are. And that is why the insight of interbeing is the foundation of any kind of action that can bring peace and help remove violence and despair. So I love how he says the insight of interbeing will help remove discrimination, fear, and dualistic ways of thinking. So often we end up in this dualistic way of thinking where it's like, these are the people that I'm with. Those are the people who are against me, with, against, here, there. And we're often setting up at these opposites. And as I said, in this relative world, it can be very helpful. But in the ultimate world, on some level, can we still hold our hearts available to those people with whom we think of as other? And then this quote continues and says, we inter are, even our suffering and our happiness inter are. There can be the false belief by many that if they just get whatever accumulation of something, that that will be their happiness. But we know because of the truth of impermanence that there's nothing to hold on to, that there, as we accumulate all of that, at some point it will also decay. And so this reliability of the refuge of Sangha, of interconnectedness, while we all still are impermanent and unreliable, we are in community with each other and supporting each other in the Sangha. And so this interbeing can be this foundation for happiness. Not easy or simple, but it is really such a beautiful field. And as Thich Nhat Hanh says, it can bring peace and help remove violence and despair. So if we look through this lens of generosity into this place of interconnectedness, then we can begin to see, as the Buddha said, like, if you knew as I knew, you wouldn't let a meal go by without sharing. That's my phrasing, not exactly the sutta, but just that sense of openness. How can I help? What can I offer? And if I look at the world right now, I see that there's a lot of people who might need support. There might be some here in the Sangha right now. You know, all of the things, the food, the drink, the clothing, the requisites, as we're in the sutta, the lodging and the lamps. It's been one of the things that I've found very inspiring to me is to begin paying attention to ways that people are being generous, people that I know, these small acts that can have such impact. Recently, there's some people that I know who get together and do things once a month on Sunday, and the email was like, send us the names and addresses or locations or how to reach any LGBTQI plus youth. We want to send them a care package with stickers and things to let them know that we love them. And I was just so touched. I was like, oh, that's so wonderful. You know, just this way that we can counter the narrative in just little ways. Another friend of mine who moved to Minnesota about 8 years ago to care for her mom started this project called, and now it's called the Empathy Project. And she started about 6 years ago. She realized there weren't that many, she's also queer, and she realized there weren't that many LGBTQIA books in the library. So she started talking to the librarian, and so she started buying books for Pride. And so like in June, they put up a little, you know, display, and now there's some other people involved. And now they're thinking about, well, maybe we should actually see if we could do something to celebrate Pride in this small town in Minnesota, because they went to another town and did something and they realized there were other, you know, other people. It's just small little things that can help people feel connected, because there are so many people who feel disconnected. I know when I worked as a classroom teacher, there were often people who would come at recess and read books with the kids. And I just loved that, you know, just because you think kids don't like reading books. But if somebody comes in and you sit down with somebody and read a book, it's so wonderful. And my sister lives in Vermont, and for a while they had some Syrian refugees in the community, and she would go over and support the community, you know, just to welcome them. And it was, she signed up, and then it became even more significant because then when the community recognized who was coming, they actually stopped the other families from coming. So she just signed up because it was part of the thing in her church that she was doing, but it really was a significant effort. So there are so many small ways, and I'm imagining if we shared here, we might hear some of the ones that are already happening in this community and the ways that people are already engaged. And so I think it's really helpful for us to know these stories about each other, to orient in this way, because we can orient so often in ways that we're like pushing each other away. And so this theme that often you hear it as like paying it forward. Of course, in Buddhism, we don't really think of anything forward or backwards. We kind of just like in the present moment. So in the present moment, how can we help? And so I just love this idea of refocusing from acquiring what's it for me into this place of like, how can I be generous from this place of knowing we are all interconnected? So, as you probably have understood from my teachings already, that I used to be a science teacher. So when I talk all about these interconnectedness, I really do think of us all as this giant ecosystem, this inescapable web, as we know we are in with each other. And so we each are at one point, and we each have connections, and we can look out and see, how can we be of use? Sometimes it's financially, sometimes it's with our heart, sometimes it's with, you know, however it might be. There are so many ways that we can support each other. And sometimes it's even just with a smile, you know, or really paying attention to somebody when you look at them. So this act of generosity helps us dissolve this concept of anatta. When I think, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? I better take it all, pile it up, instead reaching out to our neighbors. Who can we help? How can we help? Just in small ways, moment by moment, as much as we can. So I want to end with this, it's kind of a paragraph from this writer who I love. Her name is Alexis Pauline Gums. And so it's if you could just kind of allow your attention to go inwardly, because it's about breathing. This is from her book, Undrowned, about marine mammals. She says, what is the scale of breathing? What is the scale of breathing? You put your hand on your individual chest as it rises and falters all day. But what is the scale of breathing? You share air and chemical exchange with everyone in the room, everyone you pass by today. Is the scale of breathing within one species? All animals participate in this exchange of release for continued life, but not without the plants. The plants in their inverse process release what we need, take what we give without being asked. And the planet, wrapped up in the ocean breathing, breathing into the sky. What is the scale of breathing? You are part of it now. You are not alone. And the planet wrapped up in ocean breathing, breathing into the sky. What is the scale of breathing? You are part of it now. You are not alone. Thank you. Thank you for your find attention. I'd like to allow some time for comments and reflections from the community. So perhaps there's something that arose for you. Like I mentioned some things if you'd like to share about things that you might be engaged in or just questions you might have. I think it might be easiest, and I apologize to people online. I can, sh I if you want to put a question in the chat, that might be the easiest way for people here to be able to hear it, then I could read it aloud. But if you want to say something, you can wave or put the little Zoom hand up, and Bill's going to help me too. So we'll do that together. I know it's hard to speak into a big group, but anybody like to share? Please.
I really appreciate that. I've had struggles with myself and a relative with relative ability. She made it much easier and much more simple. And I was going to bring a friend today, and she has not been introduced to Buddhism. And last night she did a very generous thing, and she's trying to grow herself in many ways, that she's trying to not be as egocentric as she used to be most of her life. And last night she did such a lovely thing for a friend who was out with a group of girls, and they left, they went somewhere, and this other friend turned to her and started to tell her about she's losing her hair. And she's very worried and upset about it. And this woman, no one knows that she wears a wig. And she says, "I wear a wig. I don't want you to tell anyone here. I'm only telling you because you really need to know that." And she was absolutely amazed and felt so good that she shared it. Then she said she had Crohn's syndrome. She said, "I had ulcerative colitis and I have a bag that I wear." And she's very fashionable, very chic. And she gave of herself. So when she told me, came to my house, I said, "Thank you. I'm so proud of you." I didn't mean to say those words. "I'm proud of you." It makes me look like I'm up there. But I want to go home tonight and tell her about this talk
Oh,
and
thank
how
you.
we came from her. She's winning. Oh, I see her winning. She's so determined to look at herself and improve herself. And she was a very spoiled, selfish, materialistic person many years ago, and she has a beautiful heart. I always knew it there, and I see her growing into it more and more. This would have been a perfect message for her, and it still is a wonderful message for me. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm not sure how to share that beautiful story with all of you online. We
We can hear
don't.
it, JD, or at least I can.
Some of us, some of you, I think, could hear it. It was a very
Oh,
beautiful story of generosity of someone's friend of sharing about. I hate to do it injustice by summarizing it, but just the divulging information about themselves and wearing a wig that was very, very supportive, and other beautiful things. So thank you. Who else would like to, please.
I just wanted to say that thank you so much. This really resonated with me.
And I just have to, rem I don't know if you all know I'm doing this because I'm hard of hearing, so it would be helpful for all of us. If it would be beneficial for the sound, could you come up? I hate to, could you come then? Maybe the people online could hear too. Thank you. I hate to ask people to stand up. Everyone gets so embarrassed, but thank you. There we go. Oh, perfect. Just right there.
Absolutely.
Let me know now. We're going to have the person move closer to my little laptop and see if that helps.
So thank you so much. This was really beautiful. And the thing that you mentioned about, you don't have to give something big. It doesn't have to be something huge, but sometimes it can be just a smile. And that can be something really valuable for the other person. For example, I'm from Pakistan, and people don't realize that just the kind words or just the kind gestures or just a smile means so much to me or for a person who feels sometimes totally alone, So I tell as many people as possible, but I wish more people knew that just the tiniest word can make such a huge impact on somebody else's day and even their whole life.
Oh, thank
So
you.
yeah.
Thank you. I hope you were able to hear that. That was the practice of smiling as a gift. And Thich Nhat Hanh really, in one of the practices that he says to do, like mindfulness of smiling. And I practice that a lot because I can go into spaces and people have assumptions about me. And I find that it's very literally disarming to smile. It really opens up the field a lot. And I think the trick is that there's all this science around what it does internally. Like when you smile, that we actually feel well-being for ourselves as well. So we may so often with this act of generosity, we think we're doing it for someone else, and then we realize later, oh, I kind of feel good too. So thank you for that. Really appreciate that. Gonna look. I don't see anything in the chat. Was there anybody in the Zoom who wanted to share? Mary, please.
I can be pretty loud, unfortunately. One of the things that I have been practicing with myself, as part of my intention, my meditation, is the idea of patience. And I realized that patience and generosity are kind of, it's like they're for me, they're very, very connected because generosity shows up for me, I mean, to myself and to others, sometimes just by being patient. And patience is to me such a generous thing. And I think that, especially for myself, and if I can give it for myself, then it's so much easier to extend it outward. And I just has that, that's a huge reminder every morning meditation that that is what I want to practice. Am I always successful? No, but I'm going to be patient with that too.
Oh, thank you for that connection of patience with generosity. I think that is
such an important part of the practice of generosity is being patient, especially when we think about patience, as an act of generosity of itself, like thinking about kids when they're learning things, and how patient, or thinking about, I call my mom's 94 and I call her every day and we have a lot of the same conversations over and over again. And I just think, okay, it's not about the words anymore, is it? So there's a lot that the patience is a parami, and it really is a perfection of wisdom. So you learn a lot. So thank you. I think there's somebody online who I saw. Is that true, Bill? We had somebody raise a hand, but then I guess it went down. Liz, was that you? Did you raise your hand? Okay. Do you want to try unmuting? I put this so I
Yeah.
don't be loud enough for people to hear, but at least we'll kind of.
So I don't know if you think about renunciation, and maybe that's not fitting in terms of thinking about generosity, but I think sometimes renunciation can be generosity. I'll give an ex I'm just thinking a lot about renunciation lately and really valuing it. The other day, a person who comes to vacuum for me once a month as a volunteer, I know his arm hurt and it's been hurting. And he said, oh, it's okay, I'll vacuum for you. And I'm a poor person. I can't hire someone. I can't vacuum for myself. And I said to myself, are you going to let him vacuum for you? And I said, no way. There's no way I'm going to let this guy vacuum for me. And I kind of hate to say this, but I felt so good about myself. Because I care about this person very, very much. Why would I want him to hurt himself to help me?
Liz, thank you so much for bringing in renunciation. It's actually one of those kind of like landmines as a Buddhist teacher that people don't like you to talk about renunciation. I usually actually even use the word, sorry, I have to put my glasses on and then I can't see you all. But I often use the word simplification just because renunciation, people are like, oh, what am I supposed to do? Take, only wear the robes and carry my bowl. So, yes, even just the small renunciations, and I've seen how this ties in with what Mary was saying about patience and just the small generosities of really seeing somebody and being there in that way. And I love how you also reflected back about how then you experience joy in caring for somebody. And I think that can be really such a big part of it.
I don't, as I said, I'm just fascinated by this concept. I've been thinking about it a lot.
Oh, thank
Thank
you.
you.
Thank you. Please. Oh, you can't. Thank you coming up to the seat. Then that's actually good because then people can see you too from the in here too. Yeah, can you sit right there? Perfect. Thanks.
Thank you for your talk. I just was going to share. I'm a mother of twins, and I've been really struggling with feeling like I'm not doing enough to change the world and to fight injustice. And yet, most days I can barely just sort of get through my life. And I had an experience of flying to DC and going to a party with lots of really important people that had done incredible work in their lives to fight injustice. And I left feeling so small and inadequate. And I got on the plane, and I'm going to tell you a really fast backstory. When I had flown when my babies were little, I had an argument with a flight attendant who yelled at me while my baby was crying because we weren't sitting in the right seat, and that she wanted the baby to be with my ex, or with my now ex, who was in a different row. And it was so traumatic. And I always remember that when I'm flying, like how stressful it was. And there was a baby, I was sitting next to my now teenage son who was rolling his eyes and didn't want to talk to me. And there was a baby 3 rows behind me screaming. And I went up to the woman and I said, if you get sick of your baby screaming, give him to me. I will help you. And I know it was kind of weird, but I went over and I was like, I'm here. And she was like, okay. And she handed him over because she and her husband had been going crazy for like 30 minutes. And I walked that baby up and down the aisle for 30 minutes. And that child was so beautiful. And I was so filled with gratitude to be holding this gorgeous child who was not like hating on me, like my teenage son. And like this couple was so delighted. Like they were happy, I was happy, and I felt like, okay, I'm not famous, I'm not like, out there in the streets, but like I did this one tiny thing, and it was just a reminder of like how that fills you up. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for that. So I'm looking at the time, and I hope that you all have other stories that you can continue to share with each other, and support each other in this way of really reminding us of each other's hearts and how we can stretch and grow in this way of interconnecting with each other.